Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. The number of people not in work has increased significantly since the pandemic and the government is preparing to cut costs through big changes to the welfare system. On Sky News this morning, Work and Pensions Secretary Liz Kendall admitted that those who would not take up work or training opportunities could lose their benefits.
We now have almost 1 million young people not in education, employment or training. That's almost one in eight, often driven by mental health problems, but also for young people lacking basic skills, particularly in parts of the country that have struggled economically since the 80s and 90s. So we will bring in a new youth guarantee with more apprenticeships for young people. More opportunities to work, and let me come on to this.
You keep describing the problem and also telling me about the great opportunities.
This is the solution.
What you're not telling me is what happens if somebody decides they don't want to take the opportunity.
Because the two go hand in hand. We will provide those opportunities for young people to be earning or learning because it is a disaster for you if you don't have basic skills.
I'm hearing the carrot. Let me finish.
Well, I will say it. So you will have to take that up. There will be conditions because we think if you are out of work or lack basic skills when you're young, it can have lifelong consequences. So we will be looking at those requirements for young people who are currently economically inactive.
But you're still not telling me what happens if they say, like your requirements, like your opportunities, but actually I'm off to the chip shop.
What are the consequences? You know what? That is such a
false representation, Trevor. Let's not dance around it. Tell me what happens for people who regularly refuse to take that up. What are the consequences that you... You set it down in black and white. There will be consequences. We've been talking about this for 5 minutes and you have not told me a single consequence.
That will be that if people repeatedly refuse to take up the training or work responsibilities, there will be sanctions on their benefits.
And the reason why
we believe this so strongly is that we believe in our responsibility to provide those new opportunities, which is what we will do. We will transform those opportunities. But young people will be required to take them up, just as they did in the late 1990s with the New Deal for Young People and the late noughties with the Future Jobs Fund, because it is so damaging for young people not to have skills or not to be in work when they're young. It can have a lifelong consequence. And we do not want that future for our young people.
As Parliament prepares to vote on the assisted dying bill, Liz Kendall told Laura Koonsberg that she would vote in favour of the legislation, arguing that the safeguards involved were strong enough.
Let's turn then to a huge and very sensitive subject of assisted dying. Now, MPs will be able to vote as they wish on Friday. There's also this separate draft legislation in the Scottish Parliament, but it will be a huge discussion this week in Westminster. Now, you back this change. Why?
Look, the government's position, and it's really important I'm clear about this, is that it is a free vote. The government does not have a position of yes or no in this, but I have for many years supported this and indeed voted for it the last time because I believe in giving people as much power, say and control as possible over the things that matter to them most. And I believe the bill has the right safeguards to make sure that that can be done properly. Now, you will, I'm sure, want to get into the debate about that bill. But let me just say this thing. I think it is really important as a society we talk about what makes for a good death. Because, thank goodness, with medical advances, the sudden deaths from heart attacks and stroke are much less common than they were in the past. And many of us, in our own families, see people who take more time to die. And we really need to wake up to that question and face it about what makes a good death. And that will be different for different people. For some, it will be having that good quality palliative care in a hospice or at home. And others, I believe, would want that right to choose assisted dying.
And that is a vital conversation. But in the context of this week and the safeguards in this bill, your colleague, the Health Secretary, your colleague, the Justice Secretary, who would preside over the legal framework, she's told her constituents that the proposed safeguards are not nearly enough. They are particularly weak, to use her phrase. How can you judge that the country is ready to do this if the minister who's in charge of the justice system says the safeguards aren't strong enough?
Well, you'll understand that as a government minister, I don't want to get into discussing all of the details about that, or, you know, Shabana and Wes have strong views.
This is so important. This is a profound change.
I understand that. The government's position is neutral, but let me say this. The bill's safeguards are that you have to be terminally ill with 6 months of life remaining, to have two independent doctors agree that you are of sound mind and that you haven't come under pressure, and a High Court judge. That's what's in the bill. People will debate that. I believe that those are the strong enough safeguards. Others will disagree.
Laura Koonsberg also spoke to Belgian Health Minister Frank van den Broeke, whose country legalised euthanasia in 2002.
Much of the debate in this country right now is about the concept of a slippery slope. You would start off with very limited situations, but the law would expand over the years. Many people who are worried about that might look at what's happened in Belgium and think, actually, that's exactly what happened. You started off with very tight limits, and actually the law has expanded to include children, to include potentially now more people who suffer from dementia. Can you understand people's concerns
when they look at what's happened? I think it's a delicate issue. I think we should not tread lightly here. It's a very serious, delicate issue. But as a matter of fact, if you look into the actual trajectory of Belgian legislation, it's not been a slippery slope.
There are delicate arguments, though, as you said, and there have been controversies. And there were a pair of deaf twins, Mark and Eddie Verbessem. Now, they chose to end their lives after being told they would eventually go blind because they feared losing their independence. Now, what message did that send to people about disabilities and the rights of people with disabilities to lead full lives?
Not at all. The judgment that was made was that for these two people, their prospects created an unbearable suffering. You are deaf, mute, you will go blind, you lose everything. And so it was seen as an unbearable suffering. Obviously, that's an assessment. But I think if you go through that case, it's not someone who... It were not people who were tired of life.
This week, the ICC issued an arrest warrant for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and the UK government implied that he would be arrested if he landed on British soil, with Keir Starmer's official spokesman saying the government would fulfil its legal obligations. On Sky News, Shadow Housing Secretary Kevin Hollenrake said he would not support a decision to arrest Netanyahu.
Would you support a decision to arrest the Israeli PM if he came to London?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, we don't... For a number of reasons, Israel is not a signatory to the Rome Statute on this. Palestine is not a recognised state. We think this is the wrong move diplomatically as well as legally. So, we wouldn't. And we think Keir Starmer should definitely say that he's not going to participate in the ICC ruling.
But we are, as a state, we did sign the Rome Statute. We are a member of the ICC, like 120 other countries. Do you think that we should leave the ICC?
No, I don't think that. But I think we should be able to make a judgment.
But then how can you be in a court and accept that a court is legitimate, but decide when you are going to accept its rulings or not?
Well, courts sometimes get things wrong. We should be able to have a view on those things, and I think we should have a view on this. I mean, what you're trying to make sure is we get to the best possible outcome, the release of the hostages and peace in Israel and Gaza. That's what everybody wants. So the best way to pursue that is through diplomatic routes rather than these kind of legal routes, which we think are not the right way forward. And I am very concerned about some of the actions of Israel. Israel absolutely needs to do more to prevent loss of life. But nevertheless, they're in a situation where there's no moral equivalence between Israel and Hamas, and that's what the ICC are seeming to draw.
But this ICC point is quite important. I mean, either you're in a court and rule of law, Tories stand for that and so on, or you're not in it.
Well, I don't agree with that, because, again, the reasons that I outlined earlier.
You don't agree with the rule of law?
The Rome Statute. Israel are not a signatory to that. Palestine is not a recognised state. Okay. So I think there are legal issues around that.
And finally, Laura Koonsberg asked French Foreign Minister Jean-Noël Barrot whether he could envisage a day in which French troops were deployed in Ukraine, since President Macron had not ruled out the possibility.
President Macron previously didn't rule out putting troops on the ground. So can you see a day when French troops might be deployed in Ukraine?
What President Macron said is that we should not set and express red lines. We should set a strategic ambiguity and not say what we ought or what we ought not to do. And this is the reason why we do not discard any option publicly. And again, in close cooperation with our allies, with the UK, with the Europeans, with the US, and with the Ukrainians, we decide on what strategies to undertake.
Is everything, though, potentially on the table?
We will support Ukraine as intensely and as long as necessary. Why? Because it is our security that is at stake. Each time the Russian army progresses by 1 square kilometer, the threat gets 1 square kilometer closer to Europe. Our security is at stake, and that's why we stand alongside the Ukrainians.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Joe Bidell-Brell. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes store. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily Evening Blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/blend. Thanks for listening, and do join us again next week.